This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Beth Voorhees. The House voted on a bill yesterday that aligns West Virginia's standards for some discharges into the state's waters with federal limits. Opponents say the bill could put West Virginia's drinking water supply at risk, but supporters maintain it has the potential to attract new industry to the state. Liz McCormick reports on the debate over the bill.
House Bill 2506 is a complicated and technical bill, but in a nutshell, it relates to how much of a substance can be released into West Virginia's waterways under state permits and the places where those permits overlap. Essentially, it allows an increased discharge limit of cancer-causing and non-cancer-causing chemicals into West Virginia's streams and rivers, but only after certain calculations and observations have been made by the State Department of Environmental Protection. The DEP would decide if a new facility that planned to apply for a discharge permit could be built in an area close to other already permitted facilities. Those against the bill say it would lower the quality of the state's drinking water and be harmful to citizens. Supporters of the bill argue it would bring more jobs to the state because organizations could build more facilities on vacant industrial properties. Delegate Roger Hanshaw of Clay County is the vice chairman of the House Judiciary Committee. He explained the bill to members of the chamber.
The bill does not permit facilities to do anything that is out of compliance with the law. The bill does not allow facilities to discharge materials that aren't authorized today. The bill doesn't allow individuals or entities or permit holders to discharge anything above and beyond the existing West Virginia water quality standards. The bill has no relation whatsoever to catastrophic incidents.
One of those catastrophic incidents Hanshaw was referring to is the January 9th, 2014 Freedom Industry chemical leak in the Kanawha Valley. Hanshaw pointed out that the event was an accident on a facility that was not permitted to discharge into the Elk River outside of Charleston, and the bill would not change that. Democratic Delegate Barbara Evans Fleshour disagreed with Hanshaw's assessment.
Those of us who are in the legislature and the 300,000 other people who lost their water for up to a month, it has nothing to do with that. It has everything to do with that because we know how precious our drinking water is. We know it. It's been proven. I do not want us to be guinea pigs on lowering the water measurements so that we have the potential for more contamination.
Delegate Mark Zatezalo is a Republican from Hancock County and the lead sponsor of the bill. He noted in his floor speech that he wasn't sure how many jobs it would attract, but the potential was there.
We're in competition. We need tax base. We need to do things that we haven't done for a while. It's going to be a very difficult job. It's going to be a lot of hard work, and we all need to be engaged. This is just a small thing, but it's an important thing, and I do not, if I believed that it was going to harm the water quality of the state of West Virginia, I would be against it. I think this is a good bill, and I think it is the way for us to go.
Democratic Delegate Mike Pushkin of Kanawha County suggested there were other opportunities for the state to attract businesses.
I, for one, think it's time that we just stop, believing this tired old lie that the only thing we're good enough for here in West Virginia, the only kind of jobs we can attract in West Virginia, the only kind of economic development that we can have in West Virginia, the only kind of growth that we deserve here will be at the expense of our citizens' health, at the expense of our citizens' safety, at the expense of something as essential as the water that's flowing from their tap.
Pushkin encouraged his fellow lawmakers to look for ways to use the state's waterways as an economic driver by way of tourism. Another Democrat, Delegate Sean Fluharty from Ohio County, opposed the bill.
Here's what we've been sold for decades, decades after decades. It doesn't matter who's in power, Republican, Democratic, whatsoever. We've been told, just trust us. Just trust us. We don't need coal mine safety. Then a tragedy happens. Just trust us. We don't need workers' rights. Then a tragedy happens. And on this bill today, we've been sold, just trust us. The water will remain clean and the jobs will come raining down.
In his closing remarks, Delegate Hanshaw encouraged lawmakers to separate fact from fiction.
The most important thing in the practice of science is to divorce it from emotion. Because when we let emotion creep into any decision, We cloud our judgment and we ignore facts. Beware the shoehorn. Mr. Speaker, this bill doesn't change water quality standards. This bill gives DEP the ability to do what it's doing now in conformity with the law, and it makes West Virginia compatible with our neighboring states.
House Bill 2506 passed 63-37 and now goes to the Senate for consideration. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Liz McCormick in the House.
West Virginia's newly elected auditor, J.B. McCuskey, is not new to the legislative process. He's a former member of the House of Delegates who is now working with lawmakers to craft legislation relevant to his office. Some of that legislation has to do with OASIS, the multi-million dollar computer operating system for state government that's implementation has been repeatedly delayed. On the campaign trail, McCuskey said finishing OASIS was his top priority. And he told Ashton Mara on the legislature today he intends to keep that promise.
The first thing that we did when we got there is really just sink our teeth into what was happening, what needed to get done, and how could we get the project moving again. It got put on pause about 2 years ago or maybe 18 months ago. And I hired a special assistant, one of the two people that I've hired, to come on, and he was actually going to replace my finance director because he was retiring. And as it turned out, we lost the project manager at OASIS. And so instead of hiring a new person at a $100,000 salary at OASIS, my new finance director is splitting time between the house, between my office and OASIS. So one wonderful thing there is it's a little bit of savings for the state, both and in OASIS. But he's also somebody who understands the way organizations should be run. And he has helped me and the other members. The treasurer and the governor should get great credit for this, too. We've worked very, very well together, the three of us, getting this project moving. But we've set very, very hard deadlines. And in the last ERP meeting, we set end of fiscal year 18 as the end of the project. That is when this will all be implemented and it'll be finalized. And we're all working towards that goal now. Because what we found is nobody had asked the question, what does done look like? It was really sort of fascinating. I would go into these meetings and say, what do you contemplate when the project's over? And they're like, well, we never really thought about what it would look like when it was done. And so what we've done is started getting to done, which is an important first step, and I'm very, very confident that fiscal year 18 will be the end of this project, and we'll move on to the next phase of what we need to do.
I understand that you've only been in the office for a short time, but do you see any challenges or roadblocks in place right now that might prevent you from getting to that July 1 end date?
I mean, just government bureaucracy in general is a big roadblock. But right now, no. The treasurer's office and the governor's office, specifically Jason Pizzitel and Josh Stowers, have been really stepped up to the plate. And if the three of us can continue to work the way that we have been, I feel very confident that we're going to hit our goals.
Let's talk about some of the legislation that your office is pushing. House Bill 2475 has already been introduced. Tell us about what that bill does.
So it's what would be sort of a debt collection or an interception bill. And so essentially what it says is if somebody owes the state money and then we in turn owe them money for a service rendered, we can, instead of paying them the money, we can divert the revenue that was going to go to them into the general revenue.
Why do that now?
Well, I mean, the obvious is that we have a giant budget deficit, but we should have been always probably doing this, right? I mean, I think this is the right thing to do regardless of how our state's budget is.
Now, the auditor's office can sometimes be a difficult office to understand for people on the outside, but it has a lot to do with the way that money flows through state government. You're working on a bill that would essentially put some things into place in case there's a government shutdown, dealing with your office and with the treasurer. Can
Sure.
you talk about that, Bill?
Sure. I mean, and so what's interesting here is that the treasurer and I are the only two constitutional offices who can essentially go to jail in the event of a government shutdown if we were to pay a bill that maybe wasn't supposed to be. And so what this bill does is it changes some of the penalties that can be levied against us if we were to act in some way outside of the realm of what was supposed to happen in a government shutdown. Nobody really knows what's supposed to happen. And so, you know, I'm not worried about getting punished electorally if I do something wrong, but it seems as though, particularly in these very uncertain waters, that potentially a jail sentence might be a little excessive.
That was West Virginia Auditor J.B. McCuskey speaking with Ashton Mara on the legislature today. Tonight on the program, Governor Justice's Revenue Secretary Dave Hardy will discuss the administration's latest budget proposal. That's at 6:30 on West Virginia Public Broadcasting. One out of three non-elderly West Virginia adults have past due medical debt, according to a new report. But believe it or not, this is not necessarily a bad news story. From 2012 to 2015, past due medical debt decreased in every state. The result? Greater financial security for low to middle income families. Carol Lofton explains.
Medical debt is incredibly easy to accrue. All it takes is an accident or an unexpected bill tacked onto an expected procedure or an out-of-network charge you didn't know was out-of-network. Nationally, almost 24% of non-elderly Americans have past due medical debt, according to an Urban Institute report published this week. From state to state, though, the debt rates vary widely, from Hawaii, with about 6% of the population, to Mississippi, with about 37%. West Virginia's rate is about 33%. It's unclear exactly why such a large variation between states exists. However, Kyle Caswell, co-author of the Urban Institute study, says they did find something interesting.
In every state, we find a decline.
Meaning from 2012 to 2015, the share of non-elderly adults with past due medical debt dropped in every single state. For those of you who don't know, I didn't. Past due medical debt is debt where you miss payments. This kind affects your credit score, while regular medical debt is like having money on your credit card that isn't due yet. So why did the debt drop? Caswell wasn't willing to speculate, but the Urban Institute report points to another study that looks at the relationship between Medicaid expansion and financial security. That study, published in 2016, found states that expanded Medicaid saw a reduction in the amount of total debt that went to collection. Robert Kesner was one of the co-authors of the study.
We would argue that our estimates or what we obtain are not just correlations, but not definitively, but strongly suggest that the ACA Medicaid expansions were the cause of the reduction in medical collection and total collections that we observe across these two data sets.
Both Kesner and Caswell say this type of information is really important because past due medical debt creates a lot of financial instability for low-income families. Caswell again.
You know, one of the fundamental functions of insurance is to protect us against unexpected medical bills or medical events that have medical bills associated with them.
For Kesner, one of the fundamental functions of insurance is to protect us against financial insecurity, period.
You know, everybody focuses on access to health care and health, but, you know, one of the primary purposes of insurance, any type of insurance, is financial security. And there's no reason to expect that health insurance wouldn't provide such financial security. And sure enough, the evidence that's coming in on the ACA, our own and others, and previous evidence is very consistent with the fact that the health insurance provides financial security, which has very important implications for, you know, lots of aspects of life.
But if you remember, nearly a quarter of Americans and a third of West Virginians still have past due medical debt, even though that number has dropped over the last few years. But isn't insurance supposed to take care of that? Kesner points out that a lot of people have high deductible plans now. Even a couple $1,000 bill can be too much for some low to middle income families, he says. The Urban Institute report released this week also found that people who are uninsured continue to have higher rates of past due medical debt compared with people who have insurance. So, what would happen if Medicaid expansion is repealed or people who gained coverage under the Affordable Care Act lose it? Logically, Kesner says, then we should see a corresponding rise in financial insecurity for that segment of the population. For Appalachia Health News, I'm Carol Lofton.
Appalachia Health News is a project of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, with support from the Benedim Foundation, Charleston Area Medical Center, and WVU Medicine.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Keep up with all the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. Our producer is Ashton Mara. Our director is Teresa Wills. I'm Beth Voorhees.